How many of you boys have never wanted to hold a girl's hand? Can you put your hands up? How many of you girls never ever wanted to be kissed by your boyfriend? None. So obviously we're talking to the right people. We're talking to people that understand that there are boys and there are girls, and there's a kind of an electricity that happens between these two points that is quite strange, huh? And that's the way God designed it. He designed it that way. He designed it in a way that a man would desire a woman and that a woman would desire a man. But what we want to do during these classes together is we want to try and take that which God has created, God has designed, and put it into the right perspective. Because when you go out and watch all those videos and you watch movies and when you watch get into bad company, talk to your friends back, pick it up, you can drop it again if you want, no problem. Okay? You go and speak to your friends and they give you all sorts of advice, you know, if he's not behaving himself, this is what you should do and that's what you should do. And 9 times out of 10 you're going to get the wrong advice from your friends because they don't think in terms of scriptural reasoning. They don't think in terms of the way that God wants us to think. I want to bring you to Genesis chapter 34, and we're going to look at a young Christadelphian sister that got herself into trouble. And we'll just base our thoughts on this sister, Dinah. Now, understand that Dinah was a covenanted person. She was, by all intents and purposes, baptized. And verse 1 of Genesis 34 says that Dinah, the daughter of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. So she didn't go to her own friends within the truth, you understand? She went to the daughters of the land. She was kind of just getting a little bit tired of staying at home and doing the Bible readings and all that kind of stuff. And she maybe seen some of these posters of the Who and, you know, and she thought, that's where the action is. I want to go down to the local village and I want to go and see what the local ladies down there are doing. So she went down and she went to see the daughters of the land. So she's already kind of mixing in wrong company. Not that it's bad to have friends in the world. Not bad at all. It's just that we just need to balance the books a little carefully because sometimes they can influence in a wrong way. Now when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Harvard. Now notice this fellow, he's not an Israeli. He's not a Christadelphian, this fellow. He's a Harvard. He's one of the guys that belongs to one of these. You have gang warfare here, I believe. Is this right? What's the main gang here? In LA, they're always having gang warfare. They scribble all these things all over the walls, wherever you go, they write their names. Don't they do that around here? Not here, huh? All right, so... Well, he was obviously a gang leader, this fellow, Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Harvat. You see, because he was a prince of the country. All right, so he kind of had the fastest camel in the Middle East, huh? Maybe with racing stripes down the side, a good checkbook in the back, maybe a whole heap of credit cards like this. So he was kind of 10 times higher when he was sitting down than when he was standing up. Had all those credit cards in the back. So he was quite a cool dude, as we say back. Do you understand that language? Do you understand that? Is that the same language? You don't use that language, huh? All right, well, back in South Africa, that's what we would say. We would say that old Shechem was a cool dude. He was a prince of the land. And, of course, she was down there mixing with her friends, you see, maybe playing, these funny games that you play. I see that people stand all day. And they end up with kind of corns on their hands because they move these handles so fast. Looking at these little computer games, maybe that's what she was doing. Maybe that's where our friend Shechem saw Dinah because she was with the daughters of the land, you see. And so when he saw her, notice what he does. He took her and lay with her and humbled her. Now if you look at your margin there for that word humbled or defiled, it actually means raped. That's what he did. So he was a cool dude, right, you understand? And he saw her, and then he took her and lay with her. Does anybody not understand what that means? It's all right, you can put up your hands. I don't mind. We'll explain to you what that means if you don't know what it means. So just notice our little sister Dinah here. She might have gone down and to see the daughters of the land, and she might have kind of dressed in a way that really turned Shechem on, you see? Because, I mean, the way Scripture puts it there, he just saw her, took her, and raped her. So there's a good lesson for us. You see, because the desire that a man has for a woman works through his eyes. Now, Jesus says that in the New Testament, you see, that he that looketh at a woman to lust after her in his heart has committed adultery already with her. And that basically, boys, gentlemen, men, if you've got any hot blood running through your veins, that's your problem. Alright? A woman have another problem, you know, shopping. You watch women when they're shopping, you'll see what kind of problem they got. They have the desire of the eyes. You see? They just look at that dress and they got no money in the bank, you understand? And they just say, I just gotta have that dress, and they can just see what they're gonna look like in that dress. Fortunately, my wife over here, she doesn't buy dresses, she makes them. So that's why she's sitting here, you see. She makes all her own dresses. She makes all the kids' dresses as well. But she sees them in the shop, then she comes home and makes them. So that's okay. It doesn't cost me anything. So the point that I want to really make here is the way we dress in terms of sisters. It's a very important thing, the way we dress. Because if we dress sexily as Christadelphian young people, what we're really trying to do is we're trying to turn on the guys. Now, the guys don't really have to be turned on that much, by the way. All you have to do is just be who you are. And it's just the way you walk, the way you look, the way you sit, the way you kind of just put your head on the one side. All right? It's just that. It's just, that's all you need. And he's going to see it. And he's going to say, wow, that's great. You know what I mean? And that's the way it should work in that kind of process. But you don't have to flaunt your body. You don't have to run around with these kind of things where, you know, you have to put a little thing in your navel and do the whole trip. You have that here, these kind of halter tops, you know, right up here. And you have the kind of little short shorts down at the bottom here. And kind of half of you is, you know, kind of just there for everyone to see. Huh? Do you guys do that here? Well, we have that little problem back in South Africa. And of course, it's very important that we dress properly. Because, as I say, if you've got it, he's going to see it. If you don't have it, he's not going to see it. It doesn't matter what you do, he's not going to see it. All right, so that's important. So the first thing we want to look at here is Matthew chapter 5, verse 28. You don't have to turn it up. I've quoted it to you already. That's what Jesus says. If a man looks at a woman to lust after her, that's our problem. Men. Your problem, ladies, is slightly different. Although they are common problems, I'm just weighting it. It's more our problem than the woman's problem. So because a man is sexually stimulated by a sight, it's important that girls wear the right clothing. Smart, casual, young, be young. Don't let anyone ever rob you of being young. You're only young once, huh? And then you get to the old gray beard stuff, you know. All right? You're only young once. So enjoy it. But don't try and be sexy. Don't flaunt your body before your brethren and younger brethren to be for whom Christ died. All right, so there's a little quotation from 1 Peter 3 and verse 3. Likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they may also, without the word, be won by conversation of the wives, while they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear, whose adorning, let it not be the outward adorning of the plaiting of the hair and the silver and the tinsel and all that kind of stuff, you know. We have people back home that put hooks in their ears and they have a whole row of earrings stuck in their ears, all this kind of, and tattoos all over their bodies. Terrible. Anything to draw attention. And like I said, if you've got it, the right person is going to see it. And we need to get that into the right perspective. So let it be the hidden man of the heart in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and gentle and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. So we need to take that with ourselves. All right? Dress properly. Don't flaunt yourself before men. And of course, it's possible that Dinah had done that. She was bored of being a Christadelphian at home. She was bored with the daily readings and with her brothers. I mean, all she had was brothers, you understand? And you know how protective brothers can be, huh? Boy, they can really be a menace, especially if you're really trying to, you know, get on with a particular guy. And they don't like him. Of course, it's history, huh? You just don't get out of the starting blocks. And of course, that's going to be the problem here. And I'm sure that was Dinah's problem. All right, so let's just follow the story here. So first of all, he had sex with her. He raped her. He defiled her. He humbled her. Choose whatever word you like. It makes no difference. It means the same. And in verse 3, his soul clave unto Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the damsel, and spake kindly to the damsel. Now you see, so first of all, he had sex with her. Now he was beginning to fall in love with her. But maybe it was because of his diet. You see, he'd already established a diet of sex with her. And so he got the thing a little bit back to front, you understand? He didn't get it quite right. And maybe she was kind of angling to get out of the house now because she knew she was in trouble. And so he spake kindly to her. And if you look at the margin there, the margin tells you that he spoke to the heart of the damsel. Or he gave her all her heart's desire. So now he started really loading it on thick, you know. Oh, I'll give you a dishwasher, I'll give you this, I'll give you that. You know, double divorce pipes, hot and cold folding doors, I'll give you a big car, you know. You can have big fat tackies and you can drive through the desert and, you know, you can really be the lady of the desert. You see. Spake kindly, everything that she desired, and of course that goes back to Eve, huh? Everything that she desired to make her wise. Remember that in the Garden of Eden? She looked at the tree, she saw it. And so it worked, because you'll actually find that she stays with him. She doesn't leave. She doesn't go home to her brothers. Maybe her brother's going to beat her up or do something to her. I don't know. But maybe she was scared. But anyway, it worked because she stayed with Shechem. She shacked up with him, you see. How are we going? Does this kind of make any sense to you guys? You have friends that shack up with their boyfriends? Do they do that here in the States? Well, they do it back home as well. Maybe we're not that different. Maybe we have that same kind of feeling for each other back home that you guys have here. But maybe this could be another planet. Maybe you guys don't have this problem. So that's okay, huh? All right, so we see here that she actually stays there. And Shechem, verse 4, spake unto his father Hamor, saying, get me this damsel to wife. So he goes and speaks to his dad about it. And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. Now his sons were with his cattle in the field, but Jacob held his peace. And I'm sure he held his peace because he knew when the sons found out about it, they were really going to do a lot of damage. Verse 6, and Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to commune with him. And the sons of Jacob came out from the field when they heard it. And the men were grieved. But then they became angry. So, you see, first of all, they were grieved because they felt for their sister. They had compassion. There was a feeling. But, of course, that grief then turned to anger. We've got to watch that. That our grief doesn't turn to anger. It's so easy that that can happen. I've got three daughters, so let me just tell you, I kind of get to feel exactly how these guys were feeling. If somebody had to touch my little girl, I'd be grieved because I'd feel for them. But the chances that I'd want to kind of get myself my sawn-off shotgun, you know, and go and take this guy apart. But I mustn't do that because God says so. Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. And of course, they didn't believe that, so they went out and went and did a bit of damage, which we'll find later on in the chapter. So they became very wroth because he had wrought folly in Israel. Now that word folly is the Hebrew word Nabal. Nabal. Fool. Who's Nabal in the Bible? Let's hear it. Nabal. Nabal. Who is it? Come on, you guys. You're in America. You're 20 light years ahead of us Africans, man. Nabal. Who was Nabal? Nabal. Nabal? I'm trying to get your accent right, you see. Who is Nabal? In our readings about last week, huh? About maybe 7 days ago. Nabal. You don't know who Nabal is? Well, I'm not going to tell you. You guys are going to find out. And tomorrow when I come in here, you're going to tell me who Nabal the fool was. Abigail? Abigail's husband. Been doing his readings. That's great. Abigail's husband. And of course, if you want the story to know what a real fool was all about, you go and look at the story of Nabal. Okay? Same Hebrew word. Right? So he wrought folly in Israel in lying with Jacob's daughter, which thing ought not to be done. So they knew where the line was, you understand? They knew what the law was, they knew what the line was, they knew the rules. The rules were clearly prescribed, as they are for you. You know where the rules are, and you know every time you put your little tootsie-wootsie outside of those rules, don't you? And you're just trying to wait and see whether your dad's going to say, back in you go. But of course, you kind of just keep on putting your little foot there until you've got a good, heavy, and then the next thing, you're on the other side of the line. And of course, then it's too late. And of course, your dad has that kind of position whether he's going to move the boundaries or not. You know, whether he's going to move the boundaries for you, then of course, you're the loser. But if he keeps the boundary where it is, then you're the winner. Verse 8, and Hamor communed with him, saying, the soul of my son Shechem longeth for your daughter. So you understand now, he doesn't have the guts to go and speak to dad himself. He actually lays his trip on his father. Huh? He says, all right, now you go and speak to dad. So the two dads are now going to have a good chat about it. I pray, give her him to wife. Verse 9, and make ye marriages with us. Give your daughters unto us, and take our daughters unto you. And ye shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade therein, and get your possessions therein. And Shechem said unto his father and unto his brethren, let me find grace in your eyes. And what shall ye say unto me? And I will give it unto you. Ask me a dowry. Anything that you want, you can have it. Notice the response here. Verse 14. We cannot do this thing to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised. Uncircumcised, well, what does that mean? He was outside of the covenant. Now, in the New Testament, it is baptism. In the Old Testament, it is circumcision. And if you want the reference there, it's Colossians chapter 2. Baptism and circumcision are one and the same thing in terms of the principle. The action might be different, but the principle is the same. It is talking about a covenant in the flesh. That's what we're talking about when you are baptized. All right? A covenant in the flesh. And of course, what we have here is we have this kind of half-truth that comes out. They say, look, you're uncircumcised, you are unbaptized. So, no ways. But, if you get baptized, in other words, if you get circumcised, then it's okay. Not too bad. You'll pick it up here in the middle of verse 15. If ye will only be as we, that every male be circumcised, then we will give our daughters unto you, and we will take your daughters unto us, and of course we'll be one big happy family. Alright? That's what the world is saying at the moment. Let's all become one happy. Let's break down all the dividing walls. Let's all just become one happy family. That's what the world is saying to us all the time, through our media, through everything. Let's just become one happy family. And of course here we have the situation where they are laying down the condition. They're saying, well look, if you get baptized, then okay, no problem. Do you guys believe that? You think that's right? Do you think they should have done that? What do you think? What's your name? Corin, do you think that, I mean, if you're going out with a boy, right, and you were baptized, okay, and he wasn't baptized, do you think that you have the right to say to him, look, we're madly in love, we're having a wonderful time together, do you think that you have the right to say to him, unless you get baptized, you can't marry me? You have that right, but do you think that he's going to become a good convert, or do you think he's going to become a half-baked convert? Because that means that his motive for being baptized is you. It's a problem, isn't it? It's a problem. And you can see that in your relationships with each other. You lay that kind of condition. Look, it is. It's true. But we don't have the right to do that. Scripture has the right to do that. But we don't have the right to say, unless you get baptized, you can't get married to me. It's true that he must be baptized before he can get married, but that can't be the motive. That cannot be the motive, because if that is the motive, he becomes one of those half-baked kind of individuals. And he's never going to take his real place in the home. He's never really going to become a spiritual leader in the home. And that can create great problems. Great problems. A sister in the truth, born and bred in the truth, born, lived and died in the truth. There she is, beautiful. Fantastic knowledge of Scripture. Knows exactly what's happening. Even knows who Nabal was, you know, just like that. Off the top of her head, she'll tell you who Nabal was, you see. But of course, it's a problem when the motives are wrong. He gets baptized just because he loves you. And he doesn't get baptized. Go for it. That's right. I think what we're just talking about here is a motive. And it's right that he knows that you are a covenanted person and that he cannot marry you unless he gets baptized. But that cannot be the condition like what we're seeing here. Unless you get circumcised, you know, you're not going to have... Because in actual fact, there was no belief, you see. There was no belief, there was no faith. That's not the issue. Or that was the issue here. All right? And of course, what do these fellows do? They reckon, all right, well, look, I mean, Shechem, I mean, he was the prince of the land. He was a big deal. He was a super dude, whatever you want to call him. And, I mean, he really desired this lady. He really wanted her. And of course, he goes down to the men of the gate and says, look, better we all get circumcised. Let's do it. Because then, you know, and he comes on this trip, well, then, you know, their daughters will become our daughters and we can enter trade and we'll be one big happy family and everything's going to be fine. And of course, it doesn't work out that way at all. Let's have a look at verse 22 of the same chapter. Only herein will the men consent unto us to dwell with us, to become one people, if every male amongst us is circumcised as they are circumcised. No belief, you understand? No faith, no belief. All it was a desire of the flesh, to satisfy flesh. Verse 25, it came to pass on the third day when they were very sore. Now, circumcision at this age, by the way, is a painful process. Circumcision at the best time is a painful process. I used to live in Israel, by the way, and I was a godfather of a little baby Jewish boy, and I watched this little guy getting circumcised, 8 days old, huh? I'll explain it to you because it's quite he's kind of wrapped up like a little mummy, you understand, with bandages. And you've got this little thing kind of just standing out of the bandage like that. And the rabbi, I mean, he's got no glasses even, okay? And he's as blind as a bat. And I thought, well, I don't even watch. And you've got to hold this little guy, you see? And everyone's sitting outside there, and the father's there, and they're all sitting there with the yarmulkes on. And it's quite a position. And then somehow he does this little kind of operation and puts salt on it afterwards, huh? And this little guy screams. He goes about that color. You see the color of that carpet? That's the color he goes, this little guy's face. So as soon as he starts screaming, everyone starts dancing outside. And this is now part and parcel of the Jewish thing. It might sound quite disgusting to you, I understand. But in Judaism, if you go and watch a bris, they call it, a circumcision, that's what happens. And it's painful. That little guy screams for a long time. And of course, for us, baptism is also a painful process, isn't it? Circumcision of the heart. And it's a painful process when you're going through a circumcision of the heart. And of course, there was no circumcision of the heart here, but only of the flesh. And okay, so they were very sore, these guys, huh? And let me tell you, you know, the older you get, the more painful it is. And so these guys are, well, I don't know whether they're staggering around or lying down or kind of just lying around groaning, but whatever, they were at their most vulnerable point now. And of course, you see what happens is these two sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, they come along with their swords, while these guys are all kind of lying down groaning, and they just hack them to pieces just like that. See, they started off just by being compassionate about their sister, but now they're angry. And their anger now was manipulated. They manipulated the situation. They thought about it, they manipulated the situation. And now we find that they kill them. Verse 25, and it came to pass on the third day, when they were sore, that the two sons of Jacob, that Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brethren, took each man a sword and came upon the city boldly and slew all the males. They slew Hamor and Shechem and his sons with the edge of the sword. And it's only then, you see, that they take Dinah home. So until this point in time, Dinah has been shacking up with Shechem. But now they take her home and they look after her. And it's not a very pleasant story, is it? But it's the kind of thing that's happening around us today. That's the kind of information or the kind of way your friends think. When you go down to mix with the daughters of the land, your friends at school, your friends at college, well, you know, I mean, you might be mad about him, But if you can't get him just by being what you are, well, then you must sleep with him. And then you'll get him. Is that the kind of advice you get? I don't know whether you girls are different to the girls back home. But that's the way it happens back home. So let's just look at a little principle here. And the principle is little three Greek words for love. And we need to identify these feelings carefully. First, there is eros. Now, eros, we get the word erotic from eros. This word eros means physical love. It is sensual love. It is sexual love. It is inspired by biological nature. But it was never designed to act alone. God created it. Don't think that it's a bad thing when you desire to be with a girl, or vice versa. Don't think that that's a bad thing. God created it. And if he didn't create it, there would be no procreation. In fact, none of you would be here. Think about that. That's eros. Now, that word eros is not found in the Bible, just as a matter of interest, but it's a Greek word, and it means face-to-face love, like that. Sexual love. That's what eros is. Then we have philia love, which is friendship love. It's companionship. It's the kind of love that a father has for a son, a mother for a daughter. It's side-by-side love. Companionship. And of course, you remember that Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, that Eve, or the woman, Isha, she was taken out of the side of Adam. To be at his side, you understand? To be his companion. Not only to be his companion, but also to be his reflection. The reflection of his personage. As it is with Christ and the Ecclesia. We are taken out of the side of Jesus. And we are to reflect his character. And to reflect his nature. And then we have agape love, which means selflessness. It's a giving love. It's a sacrificial love. For God so loved the world, that's it, that he gave. All right? A giving love. It's absolute. It's infinite. It's total. It's spiritual. It's one of the reasons I brought my beautiful wife to sit before you, because that's something that she has, something that I'm learning from her. I am learning about sacrificial love from her. The babies, right? We had one little tiger, our second one. From the moment she was born, for the first 2.5 years, all she did was scream. She never slept for longer than 2 hours. You can just imagine how that tests you and pushes your patience. And my beautiful wife here, she just got out of bed and out of bed and out of bed and sorted that child and sorted that child. It was a sacrificial love. Now you girls are actually born with a lot of that in you. And we as men have got to learn about that and develop that kind of love. That sacrificial love. When you ask nothing in return. What about your mothers? Are your mothers like that? Do you have mothers that are just so giving and so caring for you? And you kind of just treat them like, you know. Huh? You do that? And you know you can just take your mom and just stretch her and stretch her and stretch her. And she's just never going to snap. But of course, Dad's different, huh? Dad's different. All right, so we've got eros, we've got philia, and we've got agape. Now, we are born with those two loves. We are born with this. Now, you've got to watch it, girls. When your boyfriend is really, really getting close to you, huh? And you're feeling like your heart's throbbing, and you're just kind of feeling all kind of melting in his arms and everything, and he says, I love you. And what he's really saying is that I want to go to bed with you. Watch it, huh? Try and identify that carefully as to whether he's saying I love you or whether I desire you. All right? He might say I love you, and we only have one word, you see, in English. He should be saying I eros you. That's what he should be saying, you see? All right? That's what he should be saying. But you see, we only have one word. We only have this word love. And so when he says, I love you, he really means it, but you've got to just make sure what he really means. And hopefully, it's a combination of those two things. And of course, if we develop those two, the eros and the philia, if we develop them, we can finally achieve this agape love. That's the kind of love the Bible talks about. In John's Gospel, agape is used all the way through John's Gospel. It's a key word to John's Gospel, agape, sacrificial love. And that's why Jesus gives his mother to John to care for when he dies. Because John understands agape. He understands selflessness. He understands sacrificial love, which is total. And not only that, he has given then the book of Revelation, the whole book of Revelation, that last great letter to write. And I believe that's the key word, agape, sacrificial love. All right, let's wind down a little. And we want to just look at Dinah again. See, because we've got God's way and we've got man's way. And we need to understand clearly what we're talking about. Absolutely clear. If you forget everything else we've talked about today, try and remember this. God's way is to fall in love. And that love that we're talking about is eros and philia. It can't happen any other way. It must be that. Your relationships with your boyfriends and your girlfriends will never start if it's not first erotic. It has to start that way. That spark. That, I mean, there's that huge crowd at the dance or wherever you are. What do they call these? When you graduate, you have a kind of a ball or a dance or something. What do they call that? Sorry? Prom. That's it. Prom. Okay. Prom. Get it right. Okay. So you go to the prom, and you with a lady that, well, you know, she's there because she's there, you know. And all of a sudden, you see that other lady there. And you've got that electricity that just happens, and you know that she's just the one. And it's just the way she walks, just the way she talks, just the way she is. So you fall in love. And of course, without that erotic spark, it will never happen. It has to happen that way, and God designed it that way. And then once that spark, that physical attraction spark, has got you going in terms of your relationship, then you need to build on philia. You need to build a relationship of friendship and talk and talk and talk and talk. And when you get frustrated, talk. I know that's hard. I know that's hard. And I say that with some conviction. I was a man of the world. I'm not proud of it. I'm not proud of it at all. But I need to share this little thought with you because it's important. Cheers. My whole view of life was carving notches on the headboard. Do you know what that means? All right. Winning ladies over, so to speak. That was my... When I was not proud of it. Long hair, smoking dope, all that kind of stuff. Huh? That was where I came from. But then when I came to the truth, I saw something which is different. I saw people that were clean. People that had a good foundation. People that had something that they stood for. And for me, this was fantastic. And so I was introduced to the truth and I started reading the Bible and I started understanding what God required of me. And I pray that God would give me somebody to share this fantastic revelation with. This fantastic discovery. This pearl of great price. And lo and behold, one day I was just driving onto the freeway. I had my headphones on and I had my long hair and my glasses. Onto the freeway, you understand? And I was just going to go into the traffic and all of a sudden I stopped. Because there was a big truck coming along, and I thought, well, I don't want to really get wiped out by this fella. And all of a sudden, bang, into the back, and I looked into the rearview mirror of my car, and I saw the most beautiful lady I'd ever seen in my life. There she is. We met by accident. She's even crying. All right. But... What I want to share with you, and that's why she's here, because she's my witness. And I mean, I can lie in front of you, but I can't lie in front of her. We had 11 months of courtship in the truth. And let me just tell you, we came pretty close, but we never did it. We did it God's way. And that's important, because God has blessed us now with a happy marriage, a marriage that just gets better and better and better and better. We are about 28,000 feet and we're cruising. And the view is pretty good. Right? And it's still getting better because we keep the rules. We stick to the rules. And God makes the rules. Not my rules. Not her rules. God's rules. And those are pretty difficult. Let me just tell you, it's difficult. I mean, she had her own flat, her own apartment. Beautiful apartment. I was still living in a kind of an outhouse, whatever it was. Well, a little house outside. Not the kind of outhouses that you guys have. But anyway, our outhouses. And of course, well, I had to move into her flat, you understand, into her apartment. But before that, before she was baptized, before all that, we had 11 months where the Lord took me and He stretched me and He stretched me. And I thought, but nobody's looking, you know. And He stretched me. And that little scripture about that, God will not tempt us above that which we are able to bear. Boy, I understand that. I really do. Because I was just about to snap, and then she, all of a sudden, she said she was going to get baptized. I'm like, wow, you know. And we'd booked to go to Bible school in the Cape, not this Cape that you got here, but Cape down in Africa. And it was like 2 weeks from the time that she was baptized until the time we were going down to Cape. And we were going to go down and play it by the book, huh? Separate rooms, and just holding hands and not getting too close. And we were going to play it by the book. This is the first relationship that I've ever had that I played it by the book. This way here. Fall in love. Get married. And have a healthy sex life. It'll happen if you do it properly. But if you break the rules, let me just tell you what happens. Is that you have jealousy in your relationship. Because you know that you broke the rules. Both of you know that you broke the rules. And what's going to happen is that there's mistrust. You don't trust her because she broke the rules. And he doesn't trust her because she broke the rules. Both broke the rules together, you understand. And you have lack of trust. And lack of trust breeds jealousy. And jealousy is a cancer in a relationship, in a marriage. It's a cancer. And it'll eat and it'll kill. Okay, so that's man's way. That's the way the world tells you to have your relationships, huh? Alright, as soon as you see her, try and get into bed as fast as possible. That's what the world tells you. Look at your TV, look at your movies, look at your videos. That's it. You guys watch that stuff? Huh? All those soap operas? Ah, ghastly stuff. All right, so they reckon, well, if you have sex first, then what you must do is fall in love. Hopefully, it might happen, it might not happen. You've got no guarantee that's going to happen. And then maybe you get married. A lot of them don't, huh? A lot of people, you know a lot of your friends that don't get married after that relationship. And of course, it can be a disaster. So if nothing else, try and do it God's way, huh? And what we want to do in our sessions together, we're going to have the first half of the remaining sessions that we have with you filmed. And the other half, we're not going to have anyone else in here but us and you. And we want to get some kind of two-way relationship going so we can understand what we're talking about from your point of view. Because we're further down the track than you guys are, you see. And we're still playing it by the book. So we got the credentials. Got it? All right, is that okay with you? Could I get one of your brethren to close in prayer for us just before we leave? All right, please remain seated.